When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
And the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
The board is crying. Producers job. They want to be down with the crowd.
BT and Sal back on The Fan. Time to hit you with the crown topic of the day. We started the show a couple hours ago talking about the red-hot New York Mets, the best team in baseball in the month of June, BT. They took it to Gerrit Cole and the Yankees last night, got themselves to within one game of 500. We'll look to keep it going. I can't even believe it. The Mets are on the verge of getting back to 500 before we even hit July, digging themselves out of an impossible hole, it seemed at the time. And doing it at the expense of the Yankees, who cannot get out of their own way right now.
Yankees are boring. Yanks are predictable. And just like that, everything changes. Every year we kind of go through this where we have these expectations for some vaunted offense. And you see little snippets and snapshots. And then all of a sudden reality sets in. And you got to start planting seeds for a complete overhaul in terms of the trade market. Because if they don't do that, I honestly don't think that the Yankees can win the World Series. I know that Judge is going to go on a massive heat. I mean, he was great again last night, but he's going to go on this crazy heater like Soto and mask some of the deficiencies. But you find me a team that's got four or five glaring, gaping holes in their starting nine, and I'll point to a team that is not a World Series team. Cashman's got a lot of work because, quite frankly, he dropped the ball doing some of the other things he should have done that he did not.
And Gleyber Torres looks lost as usual.
Lazy,
there's nothing new. Bad in the field, bad at the dish. DJ LeMahieu looks washed up.
Shot.
J.D. Davis coming in. It's an embarrassment. I mean, this is the New York Yankees. Talk about one of the best teams in baseball. And it's not just because of Rizzo being hurt or Stanton being hurt.
I agree.
It's deeper than that.
I totally agree with you. That is why the early praise that I lavished.
We all got sucked into it.
Toward Cashman, because Verdugo really did change a lot. And I'm not worried about Verdugo. I know he looks bad now. He'll get it going as well. Get it going again, I think. But left field was such a problematic spot for the Yankees that with Volpe's improvement, this is reading the Yankees early in the season, Volpe, you know, rapidly improving, and then 2-3, obviously incredible, and then Verdugo down that 6-7 spot, which is where he started, don't forget. I'm like, okay, there's more balance, it's more of a circular lineup. I did think, while I've never been a Gleyber Torres fan, I really thought that Gleyber, because he seems to be this kind of person who coasts, or at least player, coasts through things 90% of the time, and then when it's time to get paid, I just thought he'd really step on it and bang 28 home runs and hit 275 and make a big contract push and be a big difference maker for the Yankees, even though I don't like him as a player, and he's been a complete zero. So now we get a sense of what will the Yankees tolerate, and I don't think that he will do it. I will gain even more. I do like Aaron, but I will gain even more respect for Aaron Boone if he benches him tonight. When that lineup is posted. And
the problem is, who the hell are you going to play?
It doesn't matter. I don't care. I know that sounds, you have to have a solution, because when you say it doesn't matter, that's dumb.
Well, I mean, Oswaldo should be in there, period, but I can't look at Oswaldo and Gleyber out and then everybody else from last night seeing back in there.
I'll put DJ at second. At least I know DJ's going to try. I'll put DJ at second. I'll put Cabrera third.
Yeah.
Or Davis at third, and I'll put
Bryce at first base.
There must be a message sent that what Gleyber Torres pulled last night ain't flying anymore, and he's sitting tonight.
But the Mets are up, the Yankees are down, and then, of course, we discussed the New York Knicks trading for Mikal Bridges last night, getting him from the Nets, completing is a strong word, I guess, because they still have some work to do here, but adding that last big piece to what should be a championship caliber team now, no questions about it. We've always talked about for years, okay, well, when are the Knicks going to make that next big move? They signed Brunson, turned out to be a superstar beyond anybody's highest hopes, certainly the fans and media. I mean, maybe the Knicks themselves or Brunson thought he could be this, but we didn't expect him to be that. He turned into pretty much immediately a superstar, but we were waiting for the next move. This is it. The Knicks traded a bunch of draft picks to get Bridges in here. Nova Knicks fits in perfectly, exactly what they needed. More than just a 3-and-D guy. He could knock down a three. He can could defend, but he's much more than that. He could also put the ball on the floor and score. I think it's the perfect fit, BT. And now, with the other moves that will follow here, the Knicks are going to put together a team that could legitimately, no more like, oh, go to the second round, maybe get to an Eastern Conference Finals. No. Now it is sights on the NBA championship.
It's the first time since the mid-90s, even though the Yankees got there in 99 and lost to the Spurs. Remember that team, obviously. But I think the Knicks overachieved, obviously, with, that was the wacky season where they were the eighth seed and the condensed season. But just based on the seeding, they overachieved, even though we know they were always right there with Miami, give and take, whatever. But even 99, I didn't go into that year because Patrick was getting older. Patrick was banged up. I didn't go into that year thinking that the Knicks could win the championship. I thought they'd be very competitive and maybe have an outside chance. Right now, on paper, going into the season, I think you start to look at 60 wins as a real plausible possibility. You look at number one seed. I know Boston's great, but you look at that as a possibility. You look at a real team and a real chance to win the championship. And we haven't been able, if you've been truthful as a Knicks fan, you haven't been able to say that really since the mid-90s. Probably since 97 for me.
BT and Sal on the Fan. In case you missed anything so far, check it out on the free Odyssey app. Also coming up this hour, we'll have Mike Piazza joining the show at 12:40. Our friends at Town Fair Tire.
Excited?
I'm excited for that one. Yeah.
Yeah, you just kind of threw that in very casually.
Well, you were basically
kissing Matt Harvey's behind yesterday. What the heck are you going to do to Piazza today?
I can't follow that
up. I'm a little
nervous
here.
I got to keep my composure here, BT, with the big guy. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Eric is in Clifton. What's up, Eric?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. BT, happy birthday to you. Sorry you had to watch Roger Dorn play at second base for you last night. That was pretty brutal, Dorn. Man.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate
little
it.
Good.
You make run like Hayes. You hit like Bleak.
Major league guys. Hey, Bill, I got a question for you guys. I was trying to find it. I couldn't see. Did Pete Alonso, did he blow through a stop sign in the second inning? Did the third base coach tell him to hold
on? I thought he sent him. Yeah, I thought he sent him. Hey, look, it was a perfect throw by Verdugo. I had no issue sending him. I was watching it with a bunch of guys in the SOI newsroom. They did have an issue.
Really?
Sending Pete. Yeah, keep Cole on the ropes. Verdugo's got a good arm. Pete's slow. To me, I'm sending him. I know he's slow. It's a base hit. It's the major leagues. If you can't score from second base, what are we doing here? But Verdugo did throw an abs. He made a perfect
throw.
It's also polar bear, not polar cheetah. And I just think you got to know your runner. I would have held him up only because, like your boy said, Cal. I mean, I wanted to keep that wheel going. I wanted Cole knocked out early because we had him on the ropes, and I just thought maybe that's where he would have, you know, found a spot to settle in. And Sal, I know you were going a little nuts about the judge. In the eighth inning, and
you can't throw him a strike there. You can't. No.
Before that, when Soto's coming up, you got first base open. They got two on. We got two outs. They scored already once. I would have watched Soto and Judge and like taken the one run in, and then instead you're still up five. And to your point, after Judge and Soto, I'm not scared of anything, but I was terrified of the momentum that they could have built, even if Soto got a home run. And if you remember, he hit one that was fouled by about a couple of
inches. Yeah, yes. I know. I do remember that, but it was lefty on lefty, and thanks for the call, Eric. I know what you're thinking. You just can't walk everybody, though. So I'm not walking. So let Soto be. If he hits a two-run homer there, so be it. I'm not giving Judge a pitch to hit. I don't care what the circumstances are, and this is not in hindsight. I've said this for weeks, and I said it specifically yesterday as it pertained to the Subway Series. Do not pitch to Judge. I was screaming about it in the first inning yesterday. Peterson did not give in, thankfully, and ended up getting out of it. Then you had the knucklehead Reed Garrett giving. He throws him a fat pitch. What do you think Judge is going to do with that? You throw him a plate right down the middle of the. You throw him a pitch right down the middle of the plate, and he hammers it.
He did.
The only way the Yankees could even get back in the game, walk him there, or don't give in, and in turn maybe walk him, and a run scores. Big deal. And then you get the rest of that pathetic lineup that follows. You're not going to get beat that way. You cannot throw Aaron Judge a strike.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. It's funny, too, because when it's always been my mindset. I know it's different when you're going through this in real time. I get that. But I would rather, if I'm a Mets fan, I'd rather see Judge clear the bases like he did.
Stop the momentum.
Rather than a two-run double and guys are still on base. Because when there's traffic on the bases, it kind of impacts certainly where you shift defensively. There's just more things that can go awry. It's almost like, all right, you got me for four. We're up two runs still. Nobody on. Let's go. I always think a clean slate in that spot is almost easier to navigate for the team that just gave up the home run.
I understand the logic as opposed to the threat still going on. Yeah, I'd rather just not have. I'd rather, and maybe that's part of the thinking where you just give in there as opposed to walk him. Now you have a run score and you still have the bases loaded, but I'd much rather go after everybody else in that lineup. Charles is in Mahwah, New Jersey. What's up, Charles?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Happy birthday, BT.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. What's up? What's happening?
We're getting old, aren't we? We're getting old, aren't we?
Well, I mean, how old are you? You older than me? Depends. Don't let me in when
you guys are getting old.
What are you?
How old?
I don't know.
How old?
55.
Yeah, 55 just sounds a lot older than what I am today. Not by a ton of years, but it sounds older.
You're right there.
Yeah, I'm not right there.
You're
Take
right there,
easy.
Bernie. Let's call him Bernie today.
Bernie.
Are you 50 at least?
Yes. Yeah, I'm 51 today. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so you are getting up there.
Yeah, but 55 just sounds old. I don't know.
Yeah. Happy birthday, BT.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, thanks, dude. What's going on?
He's a new 30, man.
All right, let's go.
Yo, as far as the Knicks go, I called about the Yankees, but I think you have to give Randall a chance with this team. You have to, okay, for a full season. Hopefully he can last that long. I don't know if he will. I mean, injury is such an integral part of all sports today, but I think you do.
I don't think you have to, because again, I'll let you make a Yankee point for sure there, Charles. But the fact that he's going to opt out after this season, he's got a player option under contract this year, then the PO next year in 25-26, he's going to opt out. So to me, you get ahead of it. You don't just give him away, but you clear some money to get Hartenstein here, to keep him here, and to kind of fill out the rest of the roster. I don't think that he's as valuable with the ball movement that they now have than when he was, here before these other guys got here. I would trade him myself, but anyway.
Don't we need another 20-point-plus scorer, though?
No.
Don't we need one of those?
No. No.
We don't.
I don't think so. No.
All right.
All right, Charles, I got to let you go. We gave you plenty of time there to get your Yankees point in. I'm sorry. It started with
a little quick finger today.
Well, I was waiting for him to transition, and then we just kept like, okay. Just get to it. I'm sorry. We got to get to it. But thank you for taking the
sandwiches,
time to
by the
Let's
way?
Get one more.
You smell the sandwiches, by the way?
I was going to say. My wife's got some work to do here.
Yeah.
BT's wife, Jen, sent a bunch of sandwiches here.
Yes.
Now, what do you get? You multiple sandwiches or just for you?
It's for the whole show. There's four of them.
Oh, baby.
The Godfather, a little chicken cutlet parmesan.
Thank you, Jen.
Yeah.
How about that? She really does make birthday special.
I told you from the moment I wake up, it's a big deal. I appreciate that. I really do. She drives me nuts with certain things.
What else did you tell me in the break?
What? About what?
Well, from the moment you wake up, the birthday is great. We got sandwiches.
Yeah. The kids walked into the room first, so what are we doing?
Oh, baby, no, but that is really nice.
Had some chips
sandwiches
in here
sent
as well.
Over.
Yeah. How did Jen coordinate this? Did she reach out to you? How did this happen?
She did. She reached out before I stepped foot in the pre-production meeting
this morning.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden we started hearing about your texts. So we were going to...
Oh, so what restaurant? Where'd you get these from?
I pointed out a good deli around the corner.
So you took care of it.
Yeah, well,
you
kind of helped out.
That a boy.
That's
a hell of a gesture.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's awesome. That's sweet. Thank you, baby.
And I really look forward to getting home tonight. As a matter of fact, I'm not going to wait till I get home. When I'm done with the show, I'm going to call my wife. Hey, honey, a normal check-in, midday check-in.
Yep.
And, it was BT's birthday today. Oh, okay. Tell him I said happy birthday. Right. I will. But I also want to let you know what his wife did for him.
And how do you think she'll respond to that?
Oh, she'll be like, yeah, okay, that's great. Then you should have married somebody else. Something like that.
I would like to just say for our audience, okay, I would like to say this about Sal. So, now it's not too far of a deviation, but the Sal that you hear on the air, the big, bad, tough Sal who thinks he writes all the rules at home, when Sal's on the phone with his wife during the breaks, I'm not saying he's getting whipped around here, but he's not exactly dropping the hammer like he makes it seem like he is.
Bites
his tongue quite a bit is what I'm saying.
I use the hammer when I need to.
Don't we all?
We had, until I get pushed so far, and I just don't learn my lesson. Even yesterday, we were having a conversation. The first part of it, I was doing what I should be doing. Uh-huh. Oh, that's terrible. Yeah. Oh, no, I really.
Playing the yes game.
Yeah, exactly.
The apathy game.
And then it turned where it was just too much. And I was just like, all right, well, what do you want me to do about it?
Do that, too.
There's nothing I can do about it. You were great. You were doing exactly what I needed the first part of it. And then you turned it. I'm like, I can't take it anymore.
I did the same thing. You know, it's funny. It happened to me yesterday, but it wasn't with my wife. It was with Colt. I was taking Lou's game.
Yeah.
And so I got the new car, and I'm putting the spikes in the back, whatever. Yeah. I'm getting ready. You know, always on time. You know, like military time. Plenty of time. Yeah. Uniforms out, all set. Very organized with that. Water, cleats, catcher's gear in case he catches. Bats. This is 9 of them. Everything, right? Sunflower seeds, gum, the car gassed up. So... But he was like a minute late. Not bad. And he just kind of shuffled his feet a little bit. I'm like, come on, bud, we got to go. And he said something. It wasn't a big deal. And I'm like, you know what? My mom always says, pick your battles with the kids.
Right, let it go. Right.
And I don't always do that. Like, sometimes I fixate on the little teeny tiny stuff, and that's on me more than on them. She's like, pick your battles. And I'm really trying to do that more. So something happened, and it wasn't a big deal. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe a week ago I would have maybe followed up on that and been a little bit more, you know, like what's going on, or got a little annoyed. I'm like, yeah, no big deal. So he's still a little bit too short to close the trunk, right? Even though it's automated, automatic. He couldn't quite get it. I'm like, I got it, buddy, right? And I'm in this great move. All of a sudden, the thing wouldn't close. And because it's a new car, it's a little lower than what I was used to, and I smashed my head on it. I went from the best move to a curse I definitely shouldn't say, to flinging the catcher's gear into the back of the car and turning into a lunatic for 10 seconds. And then I'm like, and I felt so bad about it. I'm like an idiot. Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? Daddy's got to get better at that, buddy. I said, but I'm like, that really hurt. Mm. And it did. It hurt like hell. It was like, bang, like it rocked my head. And like my neck snapped back. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
Even when I'm trying, gets complicated.
That is tremendous. BT and Sal on the Fan. We'll get back to your calls on the side. And Mike Piazza coming up in about 20 minutes from now as well.
When this happened, you talked about it on the Fan.
He's homered. Derek Jeter homers to tie the game. And there it is. Hit number 3,000.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
It's a Jersey Mike's Yankees box office blitz. We've got a pair of field-level tickets. See the Bronx Bombers against Cincinnati, Yankee Stadium on Thursday, July 4th. Right now, be caller number 13 at 866-540-WFAN for your chance to win. It's all from Jersey Mike's, the official sub sandwich shop of the New York Yankees box office blitz and the Fan. Listen again tomorrow for another chance to win. BT and Sal on the Fan. In case you missed anything, check it out on the free Odyssey app. We've had a lot of fun today. Mets, Yanks, Subway Series, Knicks, Mikal Bridges. So there's been a lot there. Now, you said you flip back and forth. You will, to me, that drives me nuts. You'll watch the game of the Subway Series. You'll watch, like, I guess I take it for granted because I do, you know, work at SNY. I like the booth. By the way, great story last night. I'm watching the game, and this, I love doing this. I'm hanging out all night, and we got, you know, a bunch of producers, but also I sit across from Todd Zeal, Gary Apple's there, and Jerry Blevins is in town for this Subway Series as well. And Vientos hits the bullet home run that hits the wall, right? You know what I'm talking about?
About the first one.
Yeah, hits the
left
top
field, not
of the wall.
One, the one to right field, top of the wall. Got
hits
it.
The top of the wall. And goes over.
Yeah.
Zeal, without skipping a beat, goes, now, why couldn't mine do that in the World Series?
Oh, or why couldn't Timo Perez just run?
Yeah, well, right. How cool is that? I didn't even think of it. Zeal himself, you know what? Why couldn't yours?
That's funny.
He did smoke one off of Pettit.
He hit his to left field.
Right off the top of the wall.
That's right.
But it came back in. Vientos, I don't know if I've ever seen that before. Hit the top of the wall.
I've seen that before.
And
I don't
go
know.
Over like that.
I have.
That was a bullet that kind of flew over the
top.
Yeah,
I don't know if I've seen it all with the Yanks and the Mets. I think I've seen that either highlights. I wouldn't say it's common, but it's not incredibly uncommon.
I thought that was a funny line.
That is a good line.
Watching games with those guys, man, it is tremendous. But anyway, watching, for me, I guess it does bring a different perspective if you watch the Mets booth versus the Yankees booth.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Mets booth, while they're going to be, you know, unbiased in giving you the game, it's going to be more focused on the Mets angle.
Yeah.
Whereas if you watch the Yankees, it's probably going to be focused on the Yankees angle. Like, I don't think SNY did a bunch on the Gleyber Torres stuff. They showed a little bit and say, oh, he's going to make that play. And then the Yes guys apparently were going after Gleyber Torres, right?
Yeah, they were.
I know Flaherty did in the post game. I didn't watch it.
Flaherty was very good. Yeah. I thought Kay handled it well in real time at the booth. Yeah, there's no question. I think that, but that's just my approach to it. Listen, I don't know that people believe me, but I've watched the Mets my whole life as much as I've watched the Yankees because of my dad. I've said it a million times, old Dodger fan, Met fan, et cetera. And watching the Mets is just part of my nightly routine to do my job.
Right, right, of course.
I just do it. And I watch the Mets. I watch major parts of every single Met game. Now, if it's a Saturday day game, no. I mean, listen, I'm out coaching. I'm out. But, yeah, I think for me, my process to do my job the way I want to do it when the Yanks and the Mets play each other is I watch more Yes than SNY during these games. But I certainly watch both to get a little bit. I want to hear what Keith says about Soto, or I want to hear what O'Neill says about Vientos, his approaches. I find it interesting.
Yeah, and maybe there's something about the home ballpark, too, that I like watching the home feed more so. But even with this, when they're both on playing each other, I'm going to lean SNY.
Of course you are.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't even think it's just a Mets thing. I think it's, you know, I also love that booth. I think those guys are great.
I like both of the booths. I really do. I don't love the fact that there's so many different people in the Yankees booth. And I actually think that most of them
are... the rotating...
Yeah.
Who is their main...
Well, it's O'Neill and Cone.
Yeah, Cone is the main guy. I feel like he does more than O'Neill.
Cone and O'Neill.
Right, but they're all both together?
Nah, not all the time, actually. Right. Who's... Jeff Nelson sometimes.
Oh, yeah,
with like
I've heard
Ruco
Nelly.
In Seattle. Ruco's good. Nelly's good. Who else am I missing? The studios generally...
I mean, they've had a bunch of guys over the years. They tried out Maben, right?
Maben was good. I thought he was good. He's
Beltran?
Gone.
Did they try out
No,
Beltran?
They were... He did a few games that he was bad.
Right.
In my opinion. And I think the general consensus was it wasn't very good.
Todd Frazier, right?
Frazier's in studio with Curry and Lorenz. And Frazier's good.
You know, like it's a lot of people
chiming in.
Right.
Whereas with the Mets, it's you're going to get Gary, you're going to get
Blevins,
you're
going to
get and TC sometimes.
Well, no. I'm
talking about studio.
Oh, postgame. Yeah,
even the Yankee
in-game.
Studio fluctuates a little bit.
Right. Where it's always Jack.
It's always Jack, but then it's either Frazier or Flaherty or Girardi's done a few. Joe's done a few games, another one, too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a lot of people.
Yeah. I like the continuity. Matter of fact, Gary, Keith, and Ron don't do every game. Some games Keith will be off, some games Ron will be
off. Gilbs did a couple.
Yeah, he did in Chicago, actually.
Yeah, he's got to tighten some things up a little bit.
It was Gelbs and did you with Keith and Ron? I forget who it was over the weekend, but yeah, he fills in. I think he did a nice job.
I'm just kidding. I did a good job.
Think about not only filling in and doing something that you don't do all the time.
Oh, I'm totally kidding. It's a tough job.
But you're filling in for
two of the best. We're three of the best. Yeah, no, I'll totally agree.
God.
We're lucky. I think Kay's really good. I think Cohen's really good.
I like to think I'm good at what we do here, but imagine Francesa taking off in the prime of his career and me or you thinking, you know, years ago, like, oh, yeah, I could do that. Like,
we would have thought that.
There's a way to work yourself. Like, I thought that then, and then I started doing it. I was like, oh, my God, I stink. Like, it takes years to get to where you really feel comfortable. Like, I think turn off, all kidding aside, groom people the right way to get them ready. Okay, now you move off the overnight and do an evening spot.
Yeah,
okay,
a little slow
I'll
in certain
spots.
I'll give
you a little taste, and then I'll, okay, maybe do a holiday here. That
I know what you're saying.
Could it be slow? Sure, but... Yeah. You know, like, I would think that I'd be ready. Imagine listening to Mike and Chris and then having some, you know, schlub on the overhead who thinks he could do so. You know what I mean?
Well, Gelb's not a schlub.
No, I know. Well, I was saying me in that particular case.
Oh, you got gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't a schlub.
No, but still, Gelb doesn't do it all the time.
No, I know. Did he have any minor league
I don't know.
Background?
But I know he's been doing sideline forever. He does desk stuff.
Nah, he does a good job.
Jet studio host.
He does good reports.
Yeah. Tough, man. That's a tough.
The Mets sideline guys, going back to Cotter, who you and I both know. I love Cotter. Cotter's cool. And
Burkhart.
Obviously, you know, Burkhart, what he's done with his career, and Gelbs is good.
I mean,
and Gelbs is good with the Jets, too.
Yeah, guess what I'm saying.
I watch him.
Burkhart took his career to another level.
That's no doubt.
Is that even possible for most? Like, most.
No, there's only one of those jobs, really. So, I mean, that's pretty much the A. He's sitting there with A-Rod, Big Poppy, and Jeter.
Anyway.
How many jobs are like that?
WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
If you heard this song playing at Shea Stadium, you knew what it meant. Some damage was about to happen to the opposing pitcher as we welcome in
Mike Piazza to the show. BT and Sal on the Fan. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. How are you today?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Oh,
a little
great.
Better after a win last night.
Oh.
Get a little tight at the end, but we got through it.
Oh, that was a great win, Mike. Any win over the Yankees, as you know, is a great one for the Mets. You were somebody, one of the reasons why I loved you when you first got here was because you were somebody who thrived in the Subway Series. Do you have a favorite moment in particular, and what was it about the Subway Series that brought out the best in you?
Well, I think first off, just the intense emotion of those games. And I personally really enjoyed playing in Yankee Stadium as a visiting player. I mean, the only way before interleague play, obviously, would have been the World Series. And we all know how difficult it is to win a World Series, let alone get there as well. So I loved it. I mean, it was something for me. It just really triggered me and really ignited my competitiveness. And let's be honest, the season itself is a marathon. So anytime you can use something in the middle of a season to really bring up your intensity and your emotion was something that I enjoyed. And as players, we really enjoyed it kind of maybe pre-social media era, where it was just you're watching the news stories about the houses divided, you know, the civil wars. Like, my dad's a Yankees fan and my brother's a Mets fan, and we just enjoyed that. But one particular moment, I mean, obviously the home run, you know, with the Matty Franco pinch hit game, I think was probably one of the coolest times because it was just so intense. It was a national game, that televised game, and just squared that ball up pretty well. So it was a great game, and obviously I crushed that ball, so it was fun.
Mike, it's good to have you on, man. I want to actually just for a second, because we're going to be obviously New York heavy here, but I want to take you back to the beginning of your journey. This is fascinating to me because, in my opinion, you probably won't say this, I'll say it for you, there's different levels of the Hall of Fame. You're in the top level. You're one of the all-time greatest catchers. It's just no doubt. I mean, you hit 350. I mean, it's just crazy what you did. And yet, you know, we know the story. Been drafted as a favor, if you will, 62nd round. And the scouts, they got the stopwatch. What do you run, the 60? What's the pop time? I understand that scouting is subjective, but how can you do what you did as a pro and be so wildly, irresponsibly overlooked by so many scouts during the formative stage of your baseball development? How does that happen?
Well, I think when I was a kid, and it probably is still prevalent today, they used to tell us catching and left-handed pitching was the quickest way to the big leagues. And I think being a slow-footed first baseman in high school, and granted, I mean, I had some good years in high school and junior college before I converted to catcher, but I think just once I started catching and then continued to mature and then go into the Dodgers system that had incredible coaching. I mean, I had Johnny Roseboro as my catching coach and Kevin Kennedy and Reggie Smith as my hitting coach. So in high school and junior college, I did have some ability, but I think it just really took off because I was in the right place at the right time. I switched positions because the Dodgers had signed Henry Rodriguez, if you remember him, and Eric Karros. And I went to instructional and they said, listen, if you don't do another change positions, you're going home. So
wow,
it was kind of like, wow, I better change positions.
Yeah.
So I think just having perfect timing, the right instruction, and the right coaching, and just was able to continue to refine my hitting. And just, again, it's a crooked path, but nonetheless, I would take it, no question.
And obviously, it culminates. It didn't culminate in New York, but I mean, you did end up a Met, and it was a weird road to get there. The fallout with the Dodgers, trading you to the Marlins. When you first got traded to New York, because you were going through hell, I'm assuming, right? With all the stuff that went with LA, and then getting traded from there, you didn't know that New York was going to be the final destination at that time. Where were you at mentally after what went down to the Dodgers, then the Marlins, and then to New York?
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, I tell people all the time, what a culture shock, because it went from living on the beach in California and walking down to the beach volleyball championships and, you know, having some breakfast and then going to the ballpark in a very laid back environment. and excelling. That, I mean, I think at that time in my life, I mean, can you imagine coming up as a rookie in Los Angeles and making a little money and living on the beach and all the fun?
Yeah, we can, Mike.
Of that is.
We can only imagine it. You did it.
I have the record. I didn't pay for a beer in 2 years at Harry O's in Manhattan Beach. So let's just say it was a fun time. We really enjoyed it. And then having that contract, as you said, having that fallout and then being traded. And I remember going on the plane to St. Louis where the Marlins were, and I'm just saying to myself, what did I just do? What just happened here? And then eventually going to New York and being in the pressure cooker that was the Big Apple. But I think in the beginning, of course, I mean, we probably know the story. I wouldn't say I necessarily struggled. I just wasn't driving in the big runs. And I think the fans expected more, and I expected more out of myself. And it just, I think it transformed me and made me into more of an intense player, made me understand how appreciative I have to be of what I have and try to seize the moment. And just at the end of the day, in my heart, I realized I had to go all in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually was embraced and had some great years and had some great teams and amazing teammates. So it was a dream come true. And even though there was moments of frustration, you're always going to go through the roller coaster here emotionally. That's just part of being in the Big Apple. And so it was the greatest time of my life. It's something I'll obviously never forget.
We're talking to Hall of Famer Mike Piazza, 12 All-Stars, 10 silver sluggers. Insane. All right, so Mike, Soto's Soto. Torres is Torres, on the opposite end of the spectrum here. I'm talking about players who are chasing new contracts, right? And obviously, from the Mets' perspective, which is what I'm most interested in for you, is Pete. You know, trying to compartmentalize, digging into the box and hitting that blur that's moving 95 off in 100 now, and it's moving,
yeah. And
you got people cheering and booing, and you're talking to your agent during the day. How do you think so far Pete has handled this contract year?
Well, it's difficult for me to say because you can't look inside a guy's head and seeing what he's thinking and sort of how he's preparing. And personally, again, I can only speculate. We can only speculate. I hope that he's not feeling like he has to overperform. I hope he's not feeling like he has to sort of expand the strike zone and get the big hit every time to sort of earn it. I think when you go out there and you test the market, you're going to be subject to a little pressure. I mean, let's be honest. That's just the way it is. He's playing for a contract, and I was in the same boat. And there was a certain time when I was here, and I just had to kind of understand that we choose the path that we chose, and you got to live life without a rearview mirror and surrender to it. And hopefully he's able to kind of have a good finish and really put the team on his back at times and punch through and get some big hits, because this game is difficult enough just playing without the pressure of a contract. And then obviously being in New York, it's magnified even more. So, but at the end of the day, listen, I'm also a believer in faith and fate. And if it's meant to be, it's going to happen. Unfortunately, sometimes change in life is difficult. I've been through it, and I hope that because again, guys that hit, you know, capable of hitting 50 home runs, 45 home runs, just don't, they're not walking down the street. So he's a special player when he's on top of his game. And I hope, and because he came up through the Mets, he's a Met through and through. I hope they work it out and he's able to put all this behind him and have some great productive years. That's what I'm praying for.
You know, it might not be fair, Mike. We're talking about Mike Piazza. But since you came to the Mets in 98, for me personally, I have judged every top player on the team to what you did. And I refer to them as Piazza-like moments. It could be Alonso. It could be David, right? Whoever it may be. I'm like, I need to see. If you're going to be that star, I want Piazza-like moments. What was it about... I mean, dude, Hoffman, Wagner, the 9/11 stuff, the Subway Series, the Braves home run, and the big comeback off of, who'd you hit that off of? Was it Mulholland at the time? The one
down the line?
Yeah, the one you ripped down the left field. I forget who it was.
Yeah, that was Mulholland.
Yeah, and
hard
I was at,
cutter.
I couldn't, like, yeah, that nice. Went out in a hurry, and the place was nuts. Like, I almost left that game because I can't take the beatings that the Braves are handing this team anymore, but then that comeback, and you finish it off. How the hell were you able
to provide so many moments. It seemed every single time. Matter of fact, Game 5 of the 2000 World Series against Rivera, the final out, I thought you got it. I thought it was gone. I left the upper level thinking, all right, I'll see you tomorrow, and I didn't realize that, you know, Bernie was going to catch the ball. But every big moment, maybe except for that one that fell just short, you were able to deliver. How?
I think just preparation. And when I was coming to the ballpark every day, I visualized those moments. And when I teach hitting to kids, I tell these guys, listen, you have got to want to be up in the when the game is on the line. You have got to want to be the man in that situation. And let's be honest, some players shy away from it. Mentally, some guys just can't handle it. And that's just something for me that I had that special gift of hunger, of wanting to be the guy up there with the game on the line. And consequently, it'd also be on the pitching side. I mean, the best pitchers in history are the guys that want to be on the bump when the game is on the line as well. So I don't know. Is it learned or is it just gifted? I have no idea. I mean, it was just something for me. First off, you have to be prepared. So when I was going over the scouting reports and I was looking, I'm like, okay, I'm probably going to get this guy at this point in the game if the game is close. So I did do some homework, if that makes sense. I wasn't just going up there and hoping. When I taught the Italian team in the Classic last year, I say hope is not a strategy. I mean, I say a bad plan is better than no plan at all. So have a plan, be hungry, visualize yourself in those situations, and crave to be in those situations. And, you know, I was taught, as I said, by Reggie Smith, and he used to have this expression. He used to say, oh, hit it like you live, hard and in the alley. And he said, the home run hitters are driving. And this was back, he's dating myself, 70, right? Hey, man, those home run hitters, they're driving the Cadillacs, baby. And he goes, those singles hitters, they're driving the BBWs.
It was
really funny, those expressions. But I learned from that. I mean, that was part of my upbringing, and I learned from the best. And so ultimately, that was what propelled me and helped me get to those moments as well.
And you've had so many of them. And I know a lot of people reference the post 9/11 home run, which I know meant more than just the game, or we could talk about the Yankee stuff as we did. For me, and I've heard you talk about this, whether it would be on SNY with Gary, Keith, and Ron years ago, or in your book, I read about it. I've tweeted you about it. My favorite home run that you ever hit, game 6, 1999 NLCS. Mets were down in the game big. Al Leiter gave it up early on. I think it was 5-0 to Atlanta. Brian Jordan in the inning prior. I don't know if you remember this, BT. I'll never forget it because I watched Piazza like a hawk, so I knew his emotion. I could tell everything. Brian Jordan came in.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. Brian Jordan came in and took Mike out when he was standing on home plate to receive a play to get him out. Mm-hmm. He took Mike out with not a dirty slide, but an unnecessary slide. And Mike, you got up. And you had that look that he'd done something wrong. He pissed you off with that slide. You remember what I'm talking about?
I do, and it was funny. I remember for some reason Turk Wendell always plunked Brian Jordan. And I don't know why. And, of course, Brian, being a former football player, is the last guy you want to have coming around third base when you have the ball and there's going to be a play. Yeah, but he absolutely waffled me. I wasn't happy about it. Let's just say that.
Right. And the next inning, and I remember I called my buddy Van Dyer, if you're watching this game, I go, Mike is going deep. And you took Smoltz deep to right center. I believe it was the next inning, if I'm not mistaken, but shortly thereafter to tie the game with the two-run shot.
Yeah, no, I love facing Johnny. I mean, he was tough and he was competitive and he just kept throwing those hard fastballs and I was timing them. And the fortunate thing for me is I had power off field, so I didn't really feel like I had to pull the ball in those situations. But I mean, the old Turner Field, I mean, that was hard. It was starting to get, it was late, obviously, and the air was a little heavy. So to hit the ball, I mean, I squared that ball up pretty good. But you're right. I definitely had a burr in my saddle there. I was not a happy camper. I was not a happy camper. And so I was able to focus that and, Yeah, it was a great moment. It was a tough game, man. It was just, we were so spent emotionally, and they're such a great club. They always played well, and they always really played us tough. It was a great rivalry. It was frustrating because we felt like we were really getting momentum in that series, and I think we would have faced Glav the next night.
Mm.
And I think if we could have got through that game, we felt like we would have punched through, and it would have been the first Subway Series, actually, instead of 2000. It would have been probably an interesting one as well if we could have played the Yankees that year.
We're talking to Mike Piazza here, BT and Sal on the Fan. So, you know, Mike, speaking of the whole Met-Yankee dynamic, this is fun for us. We draw the lines, and this is my team, and this is my guy, and this is my stadium, and this is my stuff. So as a player, you know, the especially for
WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
If you heard this song playing at Chase Stadium, you knew what it meant. Some damage was about to happen to the opposing pitcher as we welcome in Mike Piazza to the show. BT and Sal on the Fan. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. How are you today?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Oh,
a little
great.
Better after a win last night.
Oh.
Get a little tight at the end, but we got through it.
Oh, that was a great win, Mike. Any win over the Yankees, as you know, is a great one for the Mets. You were somebody, yeah. One of the reasons why I loved you when you first got here was because you were somebody who thrived in the Subway Series. Do you have a favorite moment in particular, and what was it about the Subway Series that brought out the best in you?
Well, I think first off, just the intense emotion of those games. And I personally really enjoyed playing in Yankee Stadium as a visiting player. I mean, the only way before interleague play, obviously, would have been the World Series. And we all know how difficult it is to win a World Series, let alone get there as well. So I loved it. I mean, it was something for me. It just really triggered me and really ignited my competitiveness. And let's be honest, the season itself is a marathon. So anytime you can use something in the middle of a season to really bring up your intensity and your emotion was something that I enjoyed. And as players, we really enjoyed it kind of maybe pre-social media era, where it was just you're watching the news stories about the houses divided, you know, the civil wars. Like, my dad's a Yankees fan and my brother's a Mets fan, and we just enjoyed that. But one particular moment, I mean, obviously the home run, you know, with the Matty Franco pinch hit game, I think was probably one of the coolest times because it was just so intense. It was a national game, they had televised games, and just squared that ball up pretty well. So it was a great game, and obviously I crushed that ball, so it was fun.
Mike, it's good to have you on, man. I want to actually just for a second, because we're going to be obviously New York heavy here, but I want to take you back to the beginning of your journey. This is fascinating to me because, in my opinion, you probably won't say this, I'll say it for you. There's different levels of the Hall of Fame. You're in the top level. You're one of the all-time greatest catchers. There's just no doubt. I mean, you hit 350. I mean, it's just crazy what you did. And yet, you know, we know the story. Been drafted as a favor, if you will, 62nd round. And the scouts, they got the stopwatch. What do you run, the 60? What's the pop time? I understand that scouting is subjective, but how can you do what you did as a pro and be so wildly, irresponsibly overlooked by so many scouts during the formative stage of your baseball development? How does that happen?
Well, I think when I was a kid, and it probably is still prevalent today, they used to tell us catching and left-handed pitching was the quickest way to the big leagues. And I think being a slow-footed first baseman in high school, and granted, I mean, I had some good years in high school and junior college before I converted to catcher. But I think just once I started catching and then continued to mature and then go into the Dodgers system that had incredible coaching. I mean, I had Johnny Roseborough as my catching coach and Kevin Kennedy and Reggie Smith as my hitting coach. So in high school and junior college, I did have some ability, but I think it just really took off because I was in the right place at the right time. I switched positions because the Dodgers had signed Henry Rodriguez, if you remember him, mm-hmm. and Eric Karros. And I went to instructional league and they said, listen, if you don't do another change positions, you're going home. So
wow.
It was kind of like, wow. I better change positions. Yeah. So I think just having perfect timing, the right instruction, and the right coaching, and just was able to continue to refine my hitting. And just, again, it's a crooked path, but nonetheless, I would take it, no question.
And obviously, it culminates, it didn't culminate in New York, but, I mean, you did end up a Met, and it was a weird road to get there. The fallout with the Dodgers, yeah. trading you to the Marlins. When you first got traded to New York, because you were going through hell, I'm assuming, right? With all the stuff that went with L.A. and then getting traded from there, you didn't know that New York was going to be the final destination at that time. Where were you at mentally after what went down to the Dodgers, then the Marlins, and then to New York?
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, I tell people all the time, what a culture shock, because it went from living on the beach in California and walking down to the beach volleyball championships and, you know, having some breakfast and then going to the ballpark in a very laid back environment and excelling. That, I mean, I think at that time in my life, I mean, can you imagine coming up as a rookie in Los Angeles and making a little money and living on the beach and all the fun?
Yeah, we can,
is,
Mike.
Of that is.
we can only imagine, buddy, it. You did
us.
It.
I have the record. I didn't pay for a beer in 2 years at Harry O's in Manhattan Beach. So let's just say it was a fun time. We really enjoyed it. And then having that contract, as you said, having that fallout and then being traded. And I remember going on the plane to St. Louis where the Marlins were. And I'm just saying to myself, what did I just do? What just happened here? And then eventually going to New York and being in the pressure cooker that was the Big Apple. But I think in the beginning, of course, I mean, we probably know the story. I wouldn't say I necessarily struggled. I just wasn't driving in the big runs. And I think the fans expected more, and I expected more out of myself. And it just, I think it transformed me and made me into more of an intense player, made me understand how appreciative I have to be of what I have, and try to seize the moment. And just at the end of the day, in my heart, I realized I had to go all in New York,
mm-hmm.
and eventually was embraced and had some great years and had some great teams and amazing teammates. So it was a dream come true. And even though there was moments of frustration, you're always going to go through the roller coaster here emotionally. That's just part of being in the Big Apple. And so it was the greatest time of my life. Is something I'll obviously never forget.
We're talking to Hall of Famer Mike Piazza, 12 All-Stars, 10 silver sluggers. Insane. All right, so Mike, Soto's Soto. Torres is Torres, on the opposite end of the spectrum here. I'm talking about players who are chasing new contracts, right? And obviously from the Mets perspective, which is what I'm most interested in for you, is Pete. You know, trying to compartmentalize, digging into the box and hitting that blur that's moving 95 off in 100 now, and it's moving,
yeah.
and you got people cheering and booing, and you're talking to your agent during the day. How do you think so far Pete has handled this contract year?
Well, it's difficult for me to say because you can't look inside a guy's head and seeing what he's thinking and sort of how he's preparing. And personally, again, I can only speculate. We can only speculate. I hope that he's not feeling like he has to overperform. I hope he's not feeling like he has to sort of expand the strike zone and get the big hit every time to sort of earn it. I think when you go out there and you test the market, you're going to be subject to a little pressure. I mean, let's be honest. That's just the way it is. He's playing for a contract, and I was in the same boat. And there was a certain time when I was here, and I just had to kind of understand that we choose the path that we chose, and you got to live life without a rearview mirror and surrender to it. And hopefully he's able to kind of have a good finish and really put the team on his back at times and punch through and get some big hits, because this game is difficult enough just playing without the pressure of a contract. And then obviously being in New York, it's magnified even more. So But at the end of the day, listen, I'm also a believer in faith and fate. And if it's meant to be, it's going to happen. Unfortunately, sometimes change in life is difficult. I've been through it. And I hope that it, because, again, guys that hit, you know, capable of hitting 50 home runs, 45 home runs, just don't, they're not walking down the street. So he's a special player when he's on top of his game. And I hope, and because he came up through the Mets, he's a Met through and through. I hope they work it out and he's able to put all this behind him and have some great productive years. That's what I'm praying for.
You know, it might not be fair, Mike. We're talking about Mike Piazza. But since you came to the Mets in 98, for me personally, I have judged every top player on the team to what you did. And I refer to them as Piazza-like moments. It could be Alonso. It could be David Wright. Whoever it may be. I'm like, I need to see. If you're going to be that star, I want Piazza-like moments. What was it about... I mean, dude, Hoffman, Wagner, the 9/11 stuff, the Subway Series, the Braves home run, and the big comeback off of, who'd you hit that off of? Was it Mulholland at the time? The one down the line? Yeah, the one you ripped down the left field. I forget who it was.
Yeah, that was Mulholland.
Yeah, and
hard
I was at,
cutter.
I couldn't, like, yeah, that nice. Went out in a hurry, and the place was nuts. Like, I almost left that game because I'm like, I can't take the beatings that the Braves are handing this team anymore. But then that comeback, and you finish it off. How the hell were you able to provide so many moments? It seemed every single time. Matter of fact, Game 5 of the 2000 World Series against Rivera, the final out, I thought you got it. I thought it was gone. I left the upper level thinking, I'll see you tomorrow, and I didn't realize that, you know, Bernie was going to catch the ball. But every big moment, maybe except for that one that fell just short, you were able to deliver. How?
I think just preparation. And when I was coming to the ballpark every day, I visualized those moments. And when I teach hitting to kids, I tell these guys, listen, you have got to want to be up in the when the game is on the line. You have got to want to be the man in that situation. And let's be honest, some players shy away from it. Mentally, some guys just can't handle it. And that's just something for me that I had that special gift of hunger, of wanting to be the guy up there with the game on the line. And consequently, it'd also be on the pitching side. I mean, the best pitchers in history are the guys that want to be on the bump when the game is on the line as well. So I don't know. Is it learned or is it just gifted? I have no idea. I mean, it was just something for me. First off, you have to be prepared. So when I was going over the scouting reports and I was looking, I'm like, okay, I'm probably going to get this guy at this point in the game if the game is close. So I did do some homework, if that makes sense. I wasn't just going up there and hoping. When I taught the Italian team in the Classic last year, I say hope is not a strategy. I mean, I say a bad plan is better than no plan at all. So have a plan, be hungry, visualize yourself in those situations, and crave to be in those situations. And, you know, I was taught, as I said, by Reggie Smith, and he used to have this expression. He used to say, oh, hit it like you live, hard and in the alleys. And he said the home run hitters are driving. And this was back, he's dating myself, 70, right? He'd say, hey, man, those home run hitters, they're driving the Cadillacs, baby. And he goes, those singles hitters, they're driving the VWs.
It was
really funny, those expressions. But I learned from that. I mean, that was part of my upbringing, and I learned from the best. And so ultimately, that was what propelled me and helped me get to those moments as well.
And you've had so many of them. And I know a lot of people reference the post 9/11 home run, which I know meant more than just the game, or we could talk about the Yankee stuff as we did. For me, and I've heard you talk about this, whether it would be on SNY with Gary, Keith, and Ron years ago, or in your book, I read about it. I've tweeted you about it. My favorite home run that you ever hit, game 6, 1999 NLCS. Mets were down in the game big. Al Leiter gave it up early on. I think it was 5-0 to Atlanta. Brian Jordan in the inning prior. I don't know if you remember this, BT. I'll never forget it because I watched Piazza like a hawk, so I knew his emotion. I could tell everything. Brian Jordan came in.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. Brian Jordan came in and took Mike out when he was standing on home plate to receive a play to get him out. Mm-hmm. He took Mike out with not a dirty slide, but an unnecessary slide. And Mike, you got up. And you had that look that he done something wrong. He pissed you off with that slide. You remember what I'm talking about?
I do, and it was funny. I remember for some reason Turk Wendell always plunked Brian Jordan, and I don't know why. And, of course, Brian, being a former football player, is the last guy you want to have coming around third base when you have the ball and there's going to be a play. Yeah, but he absolutely waffled me. I wasn't happy about it. Let's just say that.
Right. And the next inning, and I remember I called my buddy Vin Dyer, I met from watching this game. I go, Mike is going deep. And you took Smoltz deep to right center. I believe it was the next inning, if I'm not mistaken, but shortly thereafter to tie the game with the two-run shot.
Yeah, no, I love facing Johnny. I mean, he was tough and he was competitive and he just kept throwing those hard fastballs and I was timing them. And the fortunate thing for me is I had power off field, so I didn't really feel like I had to pull the ball in those situations. But I mean, the old Turner Field, I mean, that was hard. It was starting to get, it was late, obviously, and it was the air was a little heavy. So to hit the ball, I mean, I squared that ball up pretty good, but you're right. I definitely had a burr in my saddle there. I was not a happy camper. And so I was able to focus that. And yeah, it was a great moment. It was a tough game, man. It was just, we were so spent emotionally and they're such a great club. They always played well and they always really played us tough. It was a great rivalry. It was frustrating because we felt like we were really getting momentum in that series, and I think we would have faced Glav the next night. And I think if we could have got through that game, we felt like we would have punched through, and it would have been the first Subway Series, actually, instead of 2000. It would have been probably an interesting one as well if we could have played the Yankees that year.
We're talking to Mike Piazza here, BT and Sal on the Fan. So, you know, Mike, speaking of the whole Met Yankee dynamic, this is fun for us. We draw the lines, and this is my team, and this is my guy, and this is my stadium, and this is my stuff. So as a player, you know, especially for you, when you were here, I mean, the Yankees were, I mean, incredible most of the time. So in the Mets club,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, was there?
Was they were it, great, yeah.
But was it spoken that, like, yeah, you know, these Yankees, like, I don't want to say that you guys felt inferior. I don't mean it like that, but that the Yankees, was that felt in the Mets organization?
Well, of course, at that time, there was a big competition, like, for the back pages of the papers. There wasn't social media. So I think maybe, as I've said before, we're kind of dating ourselves. So there was a little bit, and the newness of it, I think, as well, was also kind of prevalent, the actual Subway Series, because interleague play was still fairly new. And I think, I mean, look, we always had respect for their teams. You always have a certain amount of professional respect. And as I've said before, the course of a long season, you do have to keep things in perspective. But I think you'd be lying to say that you wouldn't get up for those games. I mean, if you couldn't get excited for these games, then you should be doing something else. But as far as professional jealousy or sort of like a hatred in the sense that we just didn't we had bad blood, not really. I mean, we had great respect for their players, and they had good teams. And the fact that we felt that these games were really exciting for the city and the fans embraced it, made it even that much more kind of special.
You know, you talk about the Subway Series and the World Series, and I remember I was at Game 2 at Yankee Stadium, and when I tell you, Mike, I legitimately almost jumped out of the upper tier onto the field level to go kill Roger Clemens myself. That's the emotion I was feeling. You were calm, cool, collected, trying to figure out what the hell was going on there. You have any regrets as to how you handled that situation and to what went down there in Game 2 with Clemens throwing that bat toward you?
You know what's funny? As I was talking about this the other day, and as I get further away from it, I think maybe there's different things about that moment kind of come to life, or at least get kind of rekindles my memory. And the weirdest thing about it, because I was thinking, I knew that at that time he was going to start coming in on me and force me to hit the ball inside. Obviously, when he hit me, I mean, I'm sure I'm lucky I'm alive from that, because I almost took my head off. But from a pitching perspective, I do believe he was going to start coming in more, because the pitches I was hitting off him were obviously down and over the plate. And I remember actually Mike Borzello, who was our pitching coach for Italy last year, the WBC, who was with the Yankees with Joe Torre many years, was telling me some stories about it. But putting all that aside, the freakiest thing that I think now is that the bat that I had that night was actually probably had a hairline fracture in it that I didn't really know about, because even though the ball was up and in, rarely you see a bat explode like that. Usually it just kind of cracks on the handle or just so
splinters
there
up.
Was, you know, I said to myself, everyone's like, do you have any regrets? I go, yeah, I actually regret I didn't take another bat, because maybe that bat had, you know, maybe some C4 in it, inside. So maybe if it didn't, disintegrate like that, that moment would have never happened.
It's funny.
Listen,
I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
It's funny you say that, because last night I was watching the game in the SNY newsroom with one of your former teammates, Jerry Blevins, and he was saying that you had the thinnest bat handle that he'd ever seen. And last night, after he said that, it was the first time that it jogged my mind as saying, you know what, maybe that's part of the reason why the bat splintered the way that it did at that particular moment.
Yeah, I mean, I used a variation. It's called a C243, which is a Rod Carew. He actually, that actual model was developed by Rod Carew with Louisville. And then I used the Mizuno bat, and I did whittle the handle down a little bit more. So I like the real, like a sledgehammer, you know, like a top heavy bat. And so, yeah, I mean, but sometimes you just don't know, you know, like you hit one and there could be a hairline fracture in there. You just don't hear. But yeah, that was a weird thing as well. So I started actually thinking about that. I'm like thinking, man, you know, maybe, because generally, as I said, that was just a weird way the bat broke. And it's history, you know, people love to talk about it. Obviously, on a bigger sense, I've said before, the home run I hit against Jeff Nelson in that game is one that will never get attention. But I was talking with Todd Zeal yesterday at an event here, and we were like, I was saying, that's one of my most proud home runs, because Jeff Nelson was so difficult on right-hand hitters.
Ugh.
And to kind of think, okay, I'm going to cheat on this pitch and look for an inside fastball, and I got it, hit it off the foul pole. That was something, was a special moment, which will always be overshadowed, unfortunately.
All right, so Mike, I want to bring it back to one more thing about the bat incident. So, Sal asked about the regret, and, you know, you said maybe you had a hairline fracture, and, you know, you wish that you knew that and it wouldn't have splintered. I got that. You're a humble guy. You're a man of faith. Got it. You had every reason and every license to go out there and try to beat the crap out of Roger Clemens that night. You did. And I'm a Yankee fan. And I thought Torrey's explanation was weak. I never bought Roger Clemens' explanation. I thought he was so in the wrong and it was so dangerous. Now, I'm sure from your perspective, it's not like it's a ball coming at you, which is scary enough. It's a bat, which never happens. So you probably weren't in the mental space that you would be in to maybe even do that. Understood. But in hindsight, I'm going to ask you again with the regret. Do you even know it was the World Series? What he did to you? Do you not regret charging the mound or not doing it?
Well, that's everything you said before then, I would say, is 100% accurate. And then another thing is, I truly went out there, and if I felt like if he would have said, hey, you know, get the hell out of here, get the F, whatever the case may be, we probably would have ended up fighting. But the fact that there was so much confusion, and he was obviously kind of like the kid that broke the window, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think he just kind of snapped, and people, and obviously he was a little bit in shock himself. And even Charlie Relliford, I remember the umpire, because he said, oh, I thought it was the ball. And then Charlie looked at me and goes, what is he talking about? And I was like, I don't know. it was bizarre. So I think the fact that it was so confusing and shocking, but I can assure you, you know, if I was walking out there and he would have said, you know, go back in the box, get whatever the case, or started becoming more aggressive, we probably would have ended up fighting, and God knows what would have happened. I mean, he's a big guy. I'm a big guy. Who knows? It could have been one way or the other. But I also, in the back of my mind, felt like, you know, if I would have got dumped or thrown out of a World Series game and my spot came up late in the game with a couple guys on, then it could have been a different story as well. People would have been like, you're selfish. You were too proud, you were too macho, and you should have came up, you know, you hurt your team by, you know, attacking him or whatever the case may be. So fortunately, I had the presence of mind and realized, listen, you know, I kind of had to remain calm. And if he was coming at me or being aggressive, like, go, you know, saying profanity, we probably would have ended up. But since there was that confusion and there wasn't that sort of intense moment, it just it unfolded the way it did.
God, it still gets me going emotionally because I remember the, you know, the initiation of it during the day-night doubleheader. And when he drilled you in the head, I took a wiffle ball back to my stereo because I was so angry that that happened. I did. I broke him. I was like, what are you doing? We got you that for Christmas. I busted. I could not. Now, I admit, unlike you, Mike, I couldn't keep my emotions in check. So I give you credit, but it was it was clearly on purpose. You owned Clemens every time you faced him.
Owned him.
He comes up and in, hits you in the head. You fall back. The eyes are rolling back. It was scary, obviously. Yeah. And I was livid. And then the follow-up to that was the Subway Series. So emotions were running high. I do on one aspect give you credit for standing cool. Somebody on the bench could have done something about it. Like, it was just a weird situation. It was unfortunate, more so that the Mets ended up losing the game. As you said, you hit the bomb off of Nelson. Jay Payton hit a home run off of Rivera, but unfortunately it wasn't enough in that game. And it was, you know, look, you ended up losing the series, but people reference that moment. I'll tell you this, Mike, to this day, I don't know where your relationship is with Clemens. I'd take him out. If I see him on site, I'm going at him.
Have you seen him?
Well, right now it would probably look like two old cows rolling in the field if we were to, it would be like no one would pay attention, but or on the golf course. I think the interesting thing was that whole series for us really didn't get off to a good start, because you remember the Todd Zeal home run that just literally was like 3 inches from going out.
Did you see, Mike, see Vientos last night, his home run that hit the top of the wall?
I was there, and it was great.
So I'm sitting next to Zeal last night at SNY, and instantly he goes, now why couldn't mine have done that in the World Series?
Yeah, exactly. And Timo Perez, you know, getting thrown out, I think he just obviously had a little bit of a brain cramp there, and just it was because we had momentum going into that series, and I feel that's the biggest regret for me is I feel like if we would have kept that momentum and that ball would have gone out, it's just one of those things. But you know, as a player, I say this as a man of faith, you just got to thank God for what you have, not for what you don't have. And we had a great team and great memories, and even though that was a very frustrating moment and a lot of things could have happened differently, it is the past. And, you know, fortunately, the team's at this point is playing better, and hopefully they can kind of scratch into the playoffs this year or further, and hopefully, you know, win a World Series. It's been a long time for the Mets, so hopefully we can get another one.
BT and Sal on the Fan with Mike Piazza, WFAN, WFAN FM, WFAN HD1, New York, and Odyssey Sports Station.
So, Mike, before we let you go and you kind of let us there here, as Mike Piazza, of course, BT and Sal on the Fan, you say you hope the Mets can become a playoff team. You know what a playoff team looks like. You know what one doesn't. Not that that's always accurate. You can be, you know, betrayed sometimes by what you think you see or know. Top to bottom, though, the bad start, how hot they are now, does this Mets team look like a playoff team?
Well, listen, to back up a little bit, I think obviously the criteria has changed a lot since when I played. There's more chances to get in. And as you've seen in the last few years, a lot of teams that have been really highly regarded going in and have good records have been beaten in the first round, because on any given day, any team can win a short series. But I've seen them at their best. I think they're a good team when they're playing well. I think they just have to stay away from those tough moments. I'd love to see a couple of guys, you know, start to get it going, if that makes sense, and get a little more momentum. And again, you know, that was a tough game last night with the bullpen. The bullpen has to be healthy. I'm avoiding a yes or no question.
We can tell. it sounds but, like no.
Are they capable? Are they capable of reaching the playoffs? I think they are, but they still have to work on some things, and they have to really have that team come together and gel, and they have to do the little things well. But the way it's set up, you never know. If they can keep playing at this pace or for a while and limp back and get into that situation, it seems like there's a lot of teams that can do it. But I think Why not the Mets? Why not?
You know, Mike, it is a pleasure talking to you. I've had the fortune of meeting you a couple of times. I've told you how much I love you. When the Mets, and this is a true story, I don't know, BT, if I told you this, and I might have told Mike, but maybe not. I broke up with my first ever girlfriend around May 18th, 1990, something around there. And the Mets traded for Mike Piazza May 22nd, 1998. Mike, that's a trade I'd make every single time. Thank you for the memories. You know, who cares? See you, Marissa. We got Mike Piazza. Mike, seriously, thank you so much for all the moments you provided. It's a pleasure to be able to talk to you. It's been a pleasure to be able to meet you a couple of different times. We love you, and thank you again for your time today. Appreciate it. There you have it.
Thank you for having me on, guys. God bless, okay? Take care, and I'll see you soon.
There you go.
That is today's call of the day. Mike Piazza, of course. It's brought to you by Ramsey Mazda. Choose wisely. Choose Ramsey Mazda. Did I tell you that one before? That is a true story.
I did know that. Oh, okay. I did know that. I mean, listen, you're talking about no water, Johnny Bench, Josh Gibson, Gary Carter, Pudge, Yogi, Piazza. I mean,
one of the great catchers of all time.
Well, there's no doubt. That's why I said, you know, there's layers to the Hall of Fame, and Mike is indisputably on the first line. I mean, he was a righty power hitter who hit 355.
Yeah, I know. The Mets version
was amazing. The Dodgers version was better.
Stats-wise, you're talking about.
Well, that's what I mean.
Well,
in terms of his
average.
I mean, he hit 350.
The moments, getting to a World Series.
I'm talking about just the stats.
God,
what
a great
hitter.
And how about the fact, though, that he had an
good answer? Good guy, too.
I like that he had an answer for why he was able to produce in those big moments.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, well, you know, some guys get lucky.
It worked out for me. Like,
no. There was preparation. There was desire to be up in those spots. And I'm telling you, I referenced 15 of them in the few minutes that we talked to him. So there were endless of those. Regular season, postseason, Subway Series, didn't matter. Even, as a matter of fact, I didn't mention this, when he came back to Shea Stadium as a member of the Padres. And I remember going to the game cheering for Piazza in 2006.
Okay.
And he hit two homers.
He hit 22 home runs that year for the Padres.
I was hoping he was hitting a third home run. I love them that much. Evan, you got on me. Evan and Joe were killing me for that.
Yeah.
At the time, how could you root for Piazza? I'm like, because I love him. What do you mean? I wish he hit three home runs. But every moment that he came, almost everyone, except that game five.
I mean, nobody, it's baseball, dude.
I'm saying,
you're going to make some outs. Well, I hate to break it to you.
I know, but
even though it's Mike Piazza.
The one against Mariano would have been nice in game five.
When I was hit, I thought it was gone.
That's what I'm saying.
Everybody,
me too.
Although, funny, Mariano didn't necessarily think it was gone. Well, I've heard different versions. Bernie thought he had it. Mike wasn't quite sure. Listen, first full year, 318, 319, 346, 336, 362. He hit 362 as a 28-year-old catcher. 362.
Yeah, I mean,
he was insane with the Dodgers and the Mets, too. And listen, Piazza, one of those guys like Doc and Darryl and David Wright. Like, I love Piazza. And I love Clemens, too. But when it comes to that situation, I always thought Clemens was full of it because the explanation made no sense. All right, so you thought it was the baseball. So you throw the baseball at Mike Piazza? Either way, you're running the risk of throwing the ball into the dugout and him getting an extra base, number one. Or you're completely disrespecting him by throwing a spherical object at him instead of a jagged edge. I want to straddle this line delicately because I love Piazza. I'd lost an ounce of respect from when he didn't charge that mound.
But don't you
I
think...
I heard his explanation, and it's interesting. If Clemens is like,
he would have gotten ridiculed.
Bleep you, get in the box. Yeah. It's a different energy, and maybe Mike would have, but
if Clemens was yelling, I thought it was the ball lying to everybody.
I know.
So if he personally went at Mike, who was walking toward him...
But he wasn't walking toward him aggressively. Yeah. He was stunned, and rightfully so.
What's your bleeping problem, or whatever it was?
I'm saying if I'm a Mets guy in that moment...
I know.
At that, I'm like, man, he hit you in the head... He almost killed you. Now he's throwing a bat at you. I don't care what game of the World Series it is. You got to go try to lay him out.
You're right.
You have to.
And I'm somebody who was literally about to jump out of the seats in the stands and do whatever I could to do my part. However, he did bring up an interesting point that I never really thought about. Mm. If he does go at Clemens and they both get ejected and Piazza's spot comes up in a big spot, you know what's going to happen. The fans and media would be saying, hey, he's selfish. You got to have better control of your emotions. You can't go. That would have been
right. Okay, true. But is Mike, I can't prove one way or the other, is Mike truly thinking that in the moment? I think
a part of him's thinking, I'm not getting kicked out of the World Series.
I don't think he is. I can never prove that. Yeah. I don't think he is. Honestly, I don't think he wanted a piece of Roger.
Come on.
I don't.
Come on.
I don't.
Come on, man. I meant what I said. I see Roger. It's on. I'll take a piece of him.
Well, what do you weigh now? 160? What do you
190,
weigh?
190. Yeah, 190?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I mean, all right, maybe you pose a little problem to his kneecaps.
I'm going to bulk up a little bit, too.
They're both big dudes, and they're both titans of the game. And I love Piazza, but I've got to always remain consistent with my take on that.
I know.
Roger deserved to get his ass handed to him right there.
I know, but it was the World Series.
I get the buts.
Yeah. BT and Sal on the Fan. More of your calls coming up on the other side. 888-808-1019 on the Fan.